and welcome to the first episode of season two of How's Your Week Been? I am super excited, super excited, and very grateful as well to be in the home of the one of the most explosive brands founders from a market perspective that I've probably seen in the last decade. We've got Alan Barrett from Grenade.
Hello.
How's it going?
Hello. Yeah, nice to meet you.
A fellow Brummie as well, which is always great.
It's always great, isn't it? To put a Brummie on the show, it's always great. Yeah, you're more excited than I am, but I'm glad you're excited. I want that jingle. Anytime I walk anywhere, I want my own jingle.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that, because we actually make a jingle for every guest. You
said. Oh, really? Was that mine, is it?
No.
Oh,
that's okay. Generic.
I've got a generic jingle.
No, that's for the episode. And then we do a jingle. That's yours, that you can, you know, take as a ringtone if you want.
Obviously make it sound incredibly masculine.
Yes.
And insightful and intelligent.
I'm going to be
honest. Which everyone realises is not true.
I'm going to be honest. I don't know what it is. This is
that doesn't
Jamie's
surprise
part.
Me.
This is Jamie's part. So what we're going to do now is listen to that jingle.
Yeah, no pressure.
Alan.
See what you did there. See what you did there. Yeah, very good. Very good.
Well done. Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Half Alan Partridge.
Half Alan Partridge.
Got it.
And half like military. It was good. So, yeah, absolute pleasure. We're in your home. Thank you very much for having us.
You're welcome. Not regretting it at all, obviously.
Yeah. We've had a little tour. It's, when I say little, I mean big tour. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. And, you know, what we do with How's Your Week Been is we get super interesting people, founders that are doing amazing things.
You couldn't find any this week.
We couldn't find anyone, so we went for someone else.
Obviously,
went for a local man.
That's why I'm here.
And we find out about what they're doing with the brand and the cut through they've had, the successes, the failures. We'll play a game. We'll do a quiz. Along the way, you can collect WIB coins. Yeah, How's Your Week Been coins.
Okay.
New crypto.
No idea what they are. I'm beginning to wish I'd listened to any of your other stuff.
That's
now.
Fine. Don't worry. We'll cut that, and then you can listen to some of the other little bit in. They're brilliant. And then from there, at the end of the show, you'll have a count. At the end of the season, the person who's got the highest, which I feel like you're quite a competitive person.
Fairly. Just what can I buy with them?
Loads of great stuff, yeah.
Really?
Nothing.
But you're not selling it to
what
me.
What you will do is you'll get some On The Tools merch at the end of it.
Lovely. Can I have a high-vis jacket?
You can have
a hat.
Yes, you can, yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah,
that sounds a bit kinky. But
yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
So, what's going on? Who are you? And what's the brand that you run? Give us a look. For the people who don't know, which means they've been living under a rock.
We're almost halfway through and we haven't said who I am yet.
Yeah.
So I'm Alan Barrett. I'm co-founder and CEO of Grenade. We're known really now for making high protein, low sugar drinks and bars. We make a bar called Carb Killer, which has just been absolute runaway success. But we've had lots of successes, I think, in various degrees. We started off as a sports nutrition brand, which we still are. Sports nutrition is still a big part of what we do. We make a lot of stuff for the military and elite athletes. The only problem being there's not that many of them. So about 2015, we decided that we should take some of our expertise in that specialised sports nutrition market, and we should make some product that just about anyone could get benefit from. And I like chocolate, because everyone likes a bit of chocolate, don't they?
Yeah.
And we'd never made any protein bars before. We'd got no experience of making protein bars, but we thought it'd be quite good to make a functional protein bar that could basically take on the confectionery brands, just lower sugar, higher protein, but try and replicate the taste as best as possible. And it's done all right. It's done all right so far.
Yeah, average. Yeah,
average. About a million bars a week. Yeah, it's all right. I'm only eating half of those. Yeah. So it's fine. So, yeah, that's pretty much what we do. So we still make all the cool specialised stuff, but you'll find our stuff now in just about everywhere you can think of. Probably easy to say where we aren't. But, yeah, we're in every supermarket, most petrol stations, most convenience stores. We are in Costa Coffee, we're all over Amazon, we're in 80 countries. So, yeah, it's all over the shop. So we're not looking for things to do. We're fairly busy.
And how long has the business been running?
How long? So it's be 10 years next February. So we founded it in February 2010. There you go. So it shows a good amount of maths. So it'd be 10 years old next February.
Wow. And so what was the point, right? You're obviously getting...
What was the point? You're just in life.
Yeah. What was the point you got to? You started in 2010. When did you go, right, okay, we're getting somewhere, we've sort of done this now. This is it now. We're about to scale, or we're about to start selling. We're going to, you know, you just said a million bars a week.
Yeah,
we almost... I mean, that's scale, isn't it? So when did you get to the point you're like, right, we've done it?
I don't think we're there yet. I think as the brand, I think still probably getting started. And I think I'm a serial entrepreneur. So I think one of the problems of being an entrepreneur is you're never there. And I say this quite a bit in terms of that. And actually, it's a bit sad because where you're kind of climbing the mountain, you could spend your whole life climbing the mountain and you spend 10 minutes at the top. So we're trying to get better. I'm trying to get better at celebrating the steps up to the top of the mountain. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know where the top of the mountain is, to be honest. So I think, because everyone says, oh, well, you know, what's it like to get there? What's it like to be there? And I was like, well, I don't really feel I'm there, because I know I don't really class myself as successful, or I guess I probably class the brand as successful, but not me, potentially, if that makes sense. But I know so many cool people have done a lot more stuff than I've done. You always aspire to the next thing and look up to that. So, and I think that's really important. You've got to keep having aspirations to do more. And I think that's probably really common with entrepreneurs.
Yeah, totally. I think that what's interesting there, though, is that being you're personally trying to improve on celebrating the wins, because I think what often happens is, like you say, you're on the journey and it's all about the journey, and actually the end goal is something that, will it be achievable? Well, I don't know. Like, you know, and when you get there, there's always going to be something else. So I think it's important to have that mindset of getting better at you know, at celebrating.
You've got to celebrate the wins, definitely. And that's brilliant. And I think as you know, as I was saying, I think we've really got to start to appreciate the wins. And you've got to have the big picture and the big goals in mind. Some will be achievable, some won't be achievable. But if you don't try, you'll never know. And I think, yeah, I'm always saying to the team, I said it last week actually in a team talk, we had like two or three big, like almost mic drop moments in terms of like, yeah, we launched in Costa, great. You know, we're 60% up on last year, great. And there's like so many wins, and there's like almost, and I was like, guys, that's great. It's great, you know. But I think the expectation is so high.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of thinking, what can we do next? What can we do next? So, and I think how I sum this up now, for me personally, is say, do you know what? Yeah, we've done well. We've done everything we set out to achieve, but there's more stuff we want to do as well. And that way you can kind of almost hit the reset button and go again.
Yeah. Because obviously, you know, you're on 10 years now, so the business of what it is now, from when, you know, were you making this, you making the product, you as in like...
As in the bars or the other stuff?
Yeah, when you first started, like...
We've never handmade bars. We've had a lot of handmade kitchen samples and testing, right, and stuff like that. In the early days when we had our weight loss product, it was very manual. So yeah, there was lots of doing stuff by hand, applying stickers, weighing things, scooping capsules, packing boxes, wrapping pallets, all that stuff. And to be honest, that we did that for the first 4 or 5 years. You know, so I mean, like we and the core team. Everyone that was coming in, no matter what the job was checking pallets and wrapping pallets, because until you get to a certain scale, no one's really got a job that's just one singular job. Like now, you know, we've got lots of people in the finance team, but for the first 4 years, you know, I was CFO, because you can't afford to have anyone as an accountant.
That's where I am, mate. That's what I'm doing. Yeah, and that's it. That's where I am.
Slightly scary.
Yeah.
You have to wear every hat as an entrepreneur founder, and then as you find people mad enough to join you, which obviously clearly you've done, as you find people that can help you on the journey, then you kind of find things for them to do. And I very much gravitated just towards people alike that like the brand, hadn't really got anything for them to do. I mean, one of our guys, I won't name him, but he's been with us for years. He's like employee number 6 or 7 or something. And I hadn't really got a job for him, but really liked him. And he was grenade mad and still is. And I just said, right, you're my shit filter. So he's like, okay, I'm Ramal's shit filter. That was his job. So, and he did lots of other stuff, but I was getting so many inbound inquiries, emails, requests, just stuff. And a lot of stuff was getting to me, and that just, you just needed to kind of divert somewhere else. So a lot of stuff then went to him, and then he would deal with it, just so it didn't get on my radar. So you always need lots of shit filters, basically.
So that must have been...
He's got a proper job now.
Yeah.
It's not still a shit
executive
filter.
Executive shit filter.
He's executive shit filter, VP. Yeah, to the CEO, he loves it. Yeah.
So you go through different stages of the business, and how do you feel now? You know, what was the
if you can pull out like a highlight part, what was the most fun bit you were doing? So like you've done 10 years now, you're at where you're at now, you're doing a million bars a week, yeah? And then in comparison from like in the kitchen packing, I don't know, a box of 100 bars, because you're like, we've got someone to buy a box off us. Can you think about a bit where you're like, when you're in it and you were like, this is it, this is so much fun, this is where I'm at?
I think maybe there's lots actually, because I think they're all proportionate to where you are at the time. So I guess the first big moment probably was where we sold our first kind of 10 pallets of our weight loss product. So that was our initial order. I remember thinking, we've sold it all. Great. So I think that was the first big moment, because it was a little bit of pressure off. We were down to about 27 quid at the time. It was getting quite sketchy. And I think as well, we didn't have any money to do a show. We got about 12 quid, our budget, to do a show. So we managed to get some stand space for next to nothing. And we got a tank for nothing. And we drove a tank into the NEC and we stood there with a tank. Just my wife and I, Jules. And we'd got like our budget for £12 we spent on a t-shirt each. So these grenade t-shirts and there's kind of the two of us and just this tank and some product. And I don't think we knew what was going to happen, but we had a really good show. We absolutely stole the show. And everyone just loved it, and I thought then we're probably onto something. And the buyer for GNC came past, which at the time was 60 stores in the UK. Now I think they've got one. But it was the biggest kind of sports nutrition chain in the UK, and they really wanted it. I think that was a good win. We got in there, it did well in there. We then went to Holland & Barrett, which they also own, so that was another big, big win. I mean, I guess getting demand from the US and getting in GNC in the US, which was 3,300 stores, was a big win. Our first warehouse, where there were still just two of us, but then we had a warehouse and 100 pallet bays. No, tell her we didn't have 100 pallet bays. That was the next one. We had about 30 pallet bays. That was a big win. My first branded vehicle, which is a Defender, was another win. There's just loads. The first time we saw our products in Tesco's on the shelf.
Yeah.
We did about a 40-mile round trip to find a Tesco with it in at 11 o'clock on a Friday night. So that was our first retail, a bit of retail space in terms of mass market, you know, after Holland & Barrett. So that was huge. You know, the first employee. And there's hundreds and if not thousands of things in between, you know, and then getting into Virgin Fast Track, meeting Richard Branson, going to Necker with Richard Branson, having Richard's room on Necker, you know, looking around. I mean, it's just, it kind of goes on and on. And even this week, just this week, you know, we've met the Stig. We just had a Costa launch, which again is another big win. Having got into Marks and Spencer's, big win. Just the growth. There'll be lots of things even just this week that I'm super proud of. So I think it, grenade's my baby, so it just keeps on going. Hence why I said, you know, you've got to celebrate the steps, because I think any one of these things in isolation is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But we've got so many of them that it can almost become kind of wallpaper, and we never want it to become wallpaper, because I think if anyone actually got a product and, you know, got it in Tesco's, it's a big deal. You know, we're in all the supermarkets. We have tons of fun, as you can imagine, which is really important, because we all work extremely hard. So I think as long as we're having fun and doing amazing things, you know, there's lots of wins in different ways.
So you've managed to create this brand, and I'm like a big lover of brand anyway, and, you know, how important it is, and particularly through product-based business as well, it's sort of everything you know that you try and launch with. But then equally, how that influences the culture. So you say 70 now.
Yeah, so yeah, we're 63, 70, yeah, 70 in the US. We've got one in the Middle East. We've probably got about 9 or 10 more vacancies.
How do you, as the CEO and as the founder, where you just said then grenade your baby, you know, someone says a bad word about it, then, you know, you're going to drive him in a tank or whatever.
They'll die, yeah.
So how do you, how does that transfer? How do you make sure? And how do you consistently make sure? Because what you've done is go through this, like a 10-year period where you've gone through so what sometimes is greater than the life cycle of a business that's been going for 40 years in terms of the
we've done
the
a lot in, and, yeah, yeah, in 9, 10 years we've done a lot. Yeah.
How do you ensure that you've got, one, the brand still is like has got everything it needs to survive and change, but then equally the people in the business understand what the brand is and the culture transfers from that? How do you not have a stuffy office that's just driving product out
and then on the outside it's got a great brand. You know, how do you keep that going?
It's probably one of the hardest things, and I think you probably know this, recruiting and finding the right people to be around you. Certainly that probably have to be a bit mad, because most entrepreneurs are a bit mad. It's very hard to find. You're never short of people applying, but you do have to filter them extremely carefully. And I've been through all of the kind of hiring your mates, which everyone does. That doesn't work. You know, they've got to be an amazing employee first, and then you become friends after that, which I have with most of the team, to be fair. We've become really good friends. You've still got to have that great employee first. That's the most important thing. If you become a good friend after, then that's a bonus. But yeah, just hiring friends, they don't turn into great employees, you know, in my opinion. Although we do actually have one that was a friend who actually did. But it's extremely hard with culture, because the culture and brand are everything. Without the brand, you don't have anything. And I'm always saying to the guys, and I'm actually doing a talk on brand for my own team in 2 weeks, because we're just due one, because we constantly need to be reminded, myself included, of just certain core principles that was certainly the case when the brand was founded 10 years ago. And I think a lot of the core principles probably, and we won't have time to go into too much detail here, but a lot of the core principles go back 10 or 20 years prior to that. Stuff that's important to Grenade and that's been important to me is important to me for a reason.
Yeah.
Things like the attention to detail and not compromising, humour, humility, all this sort of stuff's been incredibly important anyway. And I think then brands are extensions of their founders. So all the good and bad stuff, there's no bad stuff though, but all the good and bad stuff ends up in the brand.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have to filter through that. So yeah, we're always saying, you know, we must be disruptive, we defy convention, we just don't compromise on brand. If we don't love it, we don't do it ever. And that comes up a lot. We were doing some events actually a few weeks ago, and I wasn't quite feeling it. Which isn't the end of the world, as long as the team are. And I wasn't really feeling it from the team. And there was, you know, stuff at weekends, and all the team are happy to work, you know, 365 days a year, pretty much. Which again is something else you've got to find, that work ethic. And I said to the guys, is anyone really passionate about this? Because I'm not, but I want to know if you guys are. And no one was really bothered. I'm like, why are we doing it then? So, and we booked it all. And we just cancelled it all. We lost the money. And it was about 20, 25 grand. It's a lot of money. But it would have been more money had we gone and done it. We wouldn't have probably got that much out of it, because no one was really that vested in it.
Yeah.
So, and I thought it was good. And actually, we took a lot of stuff out of the marketing plan after that, just to try and keep it simple and just to put more stuff in that we wanted, that we do care about. And we ended up actually putting more tanky stuff in, which is good fun. We ended up spray painting a tank orange, which we did this week, which is quite a lot of work.
Yeah.
To be honest, with our guys that do that sort of stuff for us, and the more of that stuff that you do, that you want to do, that you enjoy, that gets great reach just because it's fun and it's genuine, it's authentic, the more great stuff then comes in. If you kind of do bad stuff for the brand that isn't right, you attract more bad stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's very much the case with people. I think you don't want to surround yourself with people who are, you know, like you as the founder, be it myself, you know, or yourself. But you do have to share the same values. But for me, I certainly have to find people who are better at me than doing all the individual jobs, which frankly is not hard. But same, I just, yeah, but I can imagine. But I conduct the orchestra, but I don't run around playing all the instruments. So you've got to find fantastic people playing instruments, but then they've got to be able to follow you and believe in you, and you've got to make good decisions. So for me, I always put the brand first. If you make good brand decisions, then everything else is kind of easy because it falls into place. And there's no losers. If the brand does well, who loses? It's great for everyone in the team. It's great for myself. It's great for our investors. It's good for the team. Consumers benefit, they get better products. All of our competitors benefit because we raise the bar, then they have to raise their bar, so we make them better. If no one else pushes forward in a category, everything just stays the same. And that's what happened with protein bars. For 20, you know, we didn't invent protein bars, but I think we invented really good protein bars. So for 20 years, people just had bland, chewy, tasteless protein bars, and they accepted that because that's all anyone did. So, like I said, even our competitors benefit. So brand coming first, and it's, yeah, really hard with getting the right people. We've actually now got a head of HR who's superb, and because she's us, she's Grenade, she's the gatekeeper for the brand, so no one comes in without seeing her, and I don't think she's only been there for 6 months. I'm pretty sure that since she started, yeah, everyone that's come via Emily has been the right person. And before, we just hadn't got the right person, because sometimes it's right for us and not for them, and sometimes vice versa.
Yeah.
It's got to be right for both parties. There's no point having a member of staff that we think is amazing and they're just having a shit time, because it doesn't work. And again, it's no point someone just coming in that's having an amazing time, they're not doing a great job. So it's a two-way street, but all the guys that my real core team have been with me from the start. They just absolutely get it, and I've got absolute faith in them. And I'll keep reminding them of that as well. Just say, guys, what do you think? You know, if you want to go and do it. Yeah. You know, don't have to sense check things with me.
No, it's good. It's I think it's the most difficult thing. We're about to go on like a big recruitment drive and double the team. You know, we're going to go up to the sort of like 65.
Three to six.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. Yeah, yeah. And it's a scary point, because you look at it and go, we've got to the point now where...
And they won't all be right.
Well, yeah, and I think that's probably...
I mean, you've got to go for start.
That's it, yeah. Someone's going to come in and do my job, do it better.
It's going to be hard.
And then I think what ends up happening is that you get to a point, what we've got to, where we've been able to recruit with most of the senior team really understanding who's been recruited. But now we're getting to the point where actually there's that... You have to let that bit go and let other people bring the people through. And then that's where sometimes the culture fit can be more subjective than it would have been. And
And actually, I think in one way it gets harder to keep finding people, but then you also have specific roles. So with you doubling your team, a lot of those would be very specific roles of doing one thing, and they're easier to find. When there's two of you or three of you, and you're like, okay, well, I just need someone to do all these different things.
Yeah.
They're really hard to find, because it's not actually a job.
Yeah.
So that's very difficult. But I get asked this a lot, but I'll ask you, let's turn the table and see what we get here. How do you find it hard to let go?
Well, I did, right? So I
did. I don't now, but I did.
Say like 2 years. So I started with like a performance coach, like a business coach, basically.
Okay.
Sort of covered off, and I did that. I started that about 18
you want to get your money back?
Months ago. Well, no, like it's probably the best thing I ever did.
Really?
I think from learning that,
I guess. Cut that bit out. He didn't go for the joke.
I'm trying not to go for all of them, because you're gonna have to be like, aren't you? But I think that's probably the best decision I made, and that was how I learned. Because two, 3 years ago, I was awful at it. Because on the tools is
just 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah,
and it's clearly much better now.
Yeah, and now I feel like I'm a lot better at of letting go of things from like all angles, really, like whether it be recruitment, whether it be that autonomy that people need in order to actually grow with the brand as well is like dead important. It's what's the point in bringing people in and giving them what would be like a senior position?
They're doing it
yourself. You can't do that. You can't do this.
Have to do that, you've definitely got the wrong people.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I'd probably say 2 years ago, I was like a right dickhead with it. I would be,
I can't make the same joke again, can I?
No, you can't. Telling people that.
Can you put a tumbleweed emoji in? You do need the tumbleweed emoji. So when you go, I used to be an absolute dickhead.
That Jamie cuts it so that at some
point... You won't cut that out. That's staying in.
And then repeat it and like, dickhead.
Oh, yeah,
dickhead,
yeah, yeah. Actually, put the screen, dickhead. Superimpose a giant penis on both of us.
Yeah.
And then, that's sticking out. I used to be a right twat.
I think I've got a lot better with it. But I think that's only for the business, it being a necessity for the business. And probably people around me being like, you're saying one thing, but then you're not actually like living by that. You're doing more difficult then, because you don't.
Yeah, you've got to, if you say it, you've got to do it. And I'm a big believer in that. Certainly. I think as well, on that note, if you judge by the company you keep, and I say this quite a lot, and this sounds pretty harsh actually, but I've got a really, really broad spectrum of people that I know through, I'm quite good at keeping in touch with people, and having, almost 30 years in business, I try and keep in touch, and it's really good to have a balance of all sorts of different people around you. But what no one needs, I think, is just a certain clique of people who probably don't aspire to do that much, which is fine. That's absolutely their prerogative. I'm not knocking that. But I think if you were permanently just surrounded by people that were didn't aspire to much and therefore probably just inadvertently holding you back, not deliberately, but you do get lots of negative people in life, and I've had this, you know, oh yeah, don't launch a grenade. Oh, it's a silly idea. That'll never sell. You know, I mean, even my own dad, you know, just said, well, what if you don't sell it? I'm like, well, yeah, well, what if I do? He said, you'll never sell all that stuff. And it's very easy for someone to, not deliberately, but knock you and knock your confidence. And, yeah. And you will have had this, definitely. And I think if you've got a lot of friends like that, get new friends. Because you don't, if you can be around people that you aspire to, they lift you up. Whereas being around people that you don't aspire to be like, it does kind of pull you down. It doesn't actually lift you up. So I don't get like all kind of spiritual.
No, but it's that contentment,
yeah,
isn't
you
it?
Do have to be around people that you admire, yeah. Definitely. And who you just think, who you can learn from. People around you that don't have a work ethic, which again is their prerogative, that's fine, just don't want to do that much, and they just want to go out every weekend and get bladdered. That's, again, that's their prerogative. That never interested me when I was a teenager, let alone now. So if you're just around, you know, I don't aspire to be like that. I'm not learning anything. So I hated school, and education wasn't for me. And I didn't go to university. And I dropped out of A levels. Just absolutely hated it. But since then, I've never stopped learning. But I've learned things I want to learn. You know, like learning to fly and things like that. So just the basic academic stuff was just not of interest to me. So I think I like to be around people that I'm learning from. And I think one of the reasons I'm still so passionate about this business is, we're learning all the time. We're doing stuff that's not been done before. I learn from the team, they learn from me, we learn from retailers learn from us. And because it's not been done, it's exciting, and every day is different, and that's what drives us forward. I think if it was just more of the same all the time and we weren't learning anything, I think we'd probably all get bored, and we'd get to that point where we go, do you know what, we've done it. But because we're learning, we haven't done it, because there's loads more to learn. Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it, that trait, like you just said then, that you hate school. Like I wasn't very academic at all, and like scraped through A levels with like an E and two U's, and then some mad university let me in, and then I dropped out 6 months in, and then
yeah.
And all that. But so
it's
many.
It's all very
so
common though with entrepreneurs.
Isn't it? It's a weird thing. The academia doesn't work, but then this aspiration and drop. I think work ethic sort of comes into that. Then even though probably you were labelled as, if you were poor at academia, you were a bit lazy, you were a bit, you know, you were, and actually those traits don't transfer very well.
The thing is though, but we've got a very, because I was actually quite academic at school because I've got a good memory, and the whole education system in the UK that I went through, maybe it's changed, but and like I said, didn't go to uni or whatever, but it was all very much about just being told something, and then if you regurgitated it back correctly, you were clever.
Yeah.
But I don't understand that.
Yeah.
And that's very much how we define intelligence in the UK. And you think, well, what about the people that just can't remember that stuff, or are clever in lots of other ways, or creatively clever? And for me, I was actually quite disruptive at school. I don't mean like, you know, throwing chairs and swearing. That came later. But I just found it so boring, because I actually found it really easy. And I like, you know, to do it and get to the end of the book, and I go, what's next? And I think I was always challenging convention then, so I was always quite good at spelling, because I've got a good memory, and I'm quite good, if I see something once, I can generally remember it. So not quite a photographic memory, but almost halfway there. And the teacher spelt a word on the board once, and she'd spelt Mississippi. And I said, oh, you've spelt that wrong, miss. And she said, no, I haven't. I said, you have spelt that wrong. And she said, how'd you spell it then? And I said, MISSISSIPPI. And I said, you've missed an S. And she got the dictionary out, and of course she was wrong. And I was six. So apart from being probably an annoying little twat, I think it probably taught me then. I've never really been scared to say, if I don't understand something, or I think something's right or something's wrong. And I think that's probably quite important, just in terms of speaking up, and so you don't understand something. And to be honest, the best person I actually know who's phenomenal at that, who everyone will have heard of, is Richard Branson. If he's the first person who doesn't understand something, he's not scared to say, actually, I don't understand that.
Yeah.
And he likes to keep business really simple, and he's well known as being dyslexic. So I think if you don't understand something, or you just want to keep it simple, and again, that's probably one of the most common things I say at work is, guys, can we just keep this simple? Because if I don't understand it, I think we probably start to get in real dangerous territory. And I think business is quite a simple thing. I mean, you know, for us, basically, we make chocolate bars. You know, we make high protein, low sugar. And there's lots and lots and lots of clever stuff that goes into it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's lots of science, lots of R&D, and loads of clever stuff by people who are a lot cleverer than I am, which, again, isn't difficult. But it's a simple thing. We make stuff, and we put it on shelves, and we sell it for more than we make it for, and then we tell people about it. And that's it. And the minute it starts to get more complicated than that, you're in real danger of, let's have 50 million pages of forecasts and spreadsheets, and let's pay for data and ask all the consumers what they think. And like, well, we know what they think. They're buyers in droves. We don't just go and ask them all individually what they think. You know, they're telling us what they think by spending money on our product. So, and you do need to have all these different aspects of the business and all the category development and data and stuff. It's just not the sort of thing that gets me excited personally. I want to make the best product we can, have fun doing it, and, you know, get a, and benefit, give consumers a benefit. With our bars, for example, give them a choice whereby they might go into a petrol station a couple of years ago and buying a pasty or a sandwich or something like that, buying actually something that's better for them.
Yeah.
And, no one needs supplements. We don't make product that people desperately need. We make stuff that people actually want, which again is more powerful. It's quite easy to sell consumers something they need. So we always try and remember that as well, the fact that we're quite lucky that consumers choose to buy this sort of stuff because they do have a choice. And ultimately, if people had an absolutely perfect diet, no one would need supplements, but nobody has a perfect diet. Yeah. So
on Grenade then, this is what I want to do now. I've got a quiz.
Oh God.
It's going to be relatively brand-led. Yeah?
Not in
the conventional sense, as in, like, you know,
a lot of this will get cut out because I won't know the answers.
With Grenade. So it's a Grenade-esque quiz.
Yeah? Okay, go on then. Did you write this?
No, Jamie did.
Okay.
But yeah. I was reading through these last night and
I've got more faith now Jamie's done.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So there's going to be some, like, right answers in there, yeah. So, number one.
Yes.
The 2010 pop hit Grenade.
Yes.
Was sung by who?
Bruno Mars.
Well done. 1 point.
Thank you.
Two, which empire is credited to the first use of grenades?
This sounds like multiple choice.
I'll give you a chance. Is it A, the Byzantine Empire?
This is a bit technical.
Is it B, the Roman Empire? Or is it C, the King Empire? Now, I don't know whether I've pronounced the first one right there, but
it definitely wasn't the Roman Empire. I don't think.
Knocking grenades around the Roman Empire.
And what were the other two?
You've got A, the Byzantine Empire, or C, the King Empire, spelt with a Q.
Okay. I'm going to go the King Empire because it probably sounds Chinese and they invented gunpowder, so I'm going to go with that one. It's Byzantine, isn't it?
It is Byzantine. Unbelievable. Yeah. Is that the way you pronounce it, Jamie?
Yeah.
He's got no idea, don't ask him.
I've never heard of it.
He's just got it on Wikipedia.
Yeah, random
question.
It's probably wrong.
Okay, and what century was that?
Jamie,
do you know what century
that
was?
I've not got that information, Alan. Come on.
He's got no idea.
It's really close between the King. The King one was the last Chinese empire before the Chinese.
I was halfway there.
You were, yeah.
I was on the right lines.
Points for halfway, come on.
Okay.
So, question number three.
I'm sweating, it's so intense.
What was the profession of the designer who popularised the pineapple-shaped grenade? Is it A, he was a baseball designer? Is it B, that he was a frisbee designer? Or is it C, he was a golf club designer?
Oh, he's got to be a baseball designer. Because I think actually, you're going to say I'm wrong there, but I think that, because it was American design, it was like the pineapple design, and I think it was designed for GIs to be able to throw it, because if they could throw a baseball, they could throw a grenade. So I'm going to go with that one.
And that is a very, very, very good answer.
But it's not
an
right,
explanation
is it?
For okay. What would be the right answer, but I'm afraid that's the wrong answer.
Really?
Yeah, it was a golf club designer.
Unbelievable. I don't know if that's correct.
Still American.
Yeah, okay. Do you throw balls?
You don't throw them, but you can.
Okay, all right. I'm querying that one.
Jury's out on that.
Jury's out on that one. Who wrote these?
Jamie. So question four. The word grenade is derived of a French fruit, but which one?
I might know this.
Do you want to just go it?
I'll have a
punt. I'll give you three points. Yeah, one. If you can get it.
Is it pomegranate?
It is. Well done.
Boom.
You've pulled yourself back there for the two answers you've got wrong. So well done. You're on 3 points in the quiz.
I like the fact you'd make this as you go along.
It's utterly
random.
Yeah, completely
random.
Do I
get extra points because it's a Friday? And you've got smart water.
The smart wall one, yeah, you get an extra point. For that. Yeah.
Got to ask.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
So, roughly, how many fragmentation grenades were produced by the USA for the Second World War? Now, this isn't an exact figure. It's rounded.
Yes, I know that one.
It's rounded to the nearest million. Yeah? Ish. So is it A, 80 million, is it B, 50 million, or is it C, 70 million?
80 million sounds like a lot. 70's close. Okay, discard got 50. I'm going to go 70.
80, 50, or 70. You're going
70?
I'm
going to go 70. Was it 80?
No, it was 50.
Really?
It was 50.
Oh, because I thought, because the 70 and 80 are close.
Yeah.
It's got to be one of those.
I thought, I've got no idea,
so I'll try and eliminate the other answer.
So from there...
But he thought ahead. He knew ahead, yeah. It's not James, not Staff as he looks.
No, he's not. No. 4 points out of the five, because you pulled it back by throwing...
Does that include the smart water one as well?
No, 5 points now.
Five out of five, brilliant.
Yeah.
So I've got a perfect score.
Yeah. Jamie would have given you points for it being a Friday, but I don't do that.
No, because that'd just be that'd be really stupid, wouldn't it?
But what you do get the opportunity now... Right.
Is this a record? Has anyone got full marks before? Technically full marks, for getting most of them wrong.
I think we've had one person who got four, not five.
Oh, there you go.
But what you do have an opportunity for now, right?
It's a bonus. I've got a bonus round.
Okay. Where you can double the points you've just collected on that game. Yeah. So you got 4 points from that game. Not giving you a smart war one.
Okay.
You can.
You've already said you are, mate. You're
No. You can have it. Oh, you can't have it to double because you only got four on the quiz.
Okay. Yeah. That's
so you got four on the
marginally
quiz.
Marginally fair.
Four on the
okay.
quiz. You get to ask me a multiple choice question, yeah? You have to think, I'll give you like 10 seconds to think of one now. You give me a question with three multiple choice, and then you have to, I'm trusting that you're going to be honest. You look an honest guy.
Okay,
you
seem
honest.
Okay.
If I get it wrong, then you get the double points. If I get it right, stay where you are. I'm giving you
okay.
a chance here, yeah?
Okay, so that's ruled out my
first
question.
Doesn't have to be about grenades.
No, just as well. I was actually going to say, who's most attractive, Albert, Jamie, or Kendall? Was going to be the question, but then you're obviously going to go Jamie.
Yes.
So.
And there's no, and there's not officially a right answer for that either.
No. So.
You might say that, but.
I still haven't thought of a question. Shit. Okay. Hang on a minute. Well, the pressure's on now. So I've got to give you a question.
Three
multiple choice answers.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
If I get it right, you stand 4 points. If I get it wrong,
I can double.
Then
so I've got to find something
right.
really
quite difficult.
Okay. All right then.
Don't worry,
okay.
We'll cut this. It's fine.
Okay. So what is my middle name?
Shit on it. He went for like a really like difficult one. Go on.
Okay. Is it Brian? Is it John? Or is it Richard?
It's definitely John.
No, it's Richard.
Shit. You know the best way. What the first person that I've got that wrong with? Because what usually happens is when people are put under pressure for a multiple choice question,
they can't think of one.
But when they deliver it, it's so obvious, and you moved your eyes on John.
I did. Yeah, I know. I did it. Did a Richard at the end, and I thought about it. See, I just snuck ahead of you.
8 points.
8 points.
You're in good standing.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Is that 8 out of 5? Is it impossible?
No, it's just 8 out of.
Is everyone getting asked the same amount of questions?
On the quiz, yeah.
Okay.
But you can collect quid points all the way through. Like, if you give a decent bit of spiel, then sometimes I can...
I must get loads.
Points. Oh, well, I've got...
9.
Oh, yeah, of course it's 9.
Oh, there you go.
Smart,
thank you. Yeah, thank you. Boom. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I'm glad
keep
you bought that.
Yeah. Okay. So... A couple of things. I only want to
cover
a few more
things all week.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah, it is good. That's quite difficult in my life. So yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I was going to say you've met Stig. You painted a tank orange.
Painted a tank orange.
I did the most random thing for your week.
I squeezed James Haskell into an orange mini this week.
And so that's more random than that.
Not physically. I inserted James Haskell into a mini and then into a tank, which was sprayed orange, and then we went out with a Stig.
But I still tipped.
But it was still random. Yeah, it was. Good job.
So what is Alan Barrett's sort of day-to-day now? So obviously the business has changed a lot over a long period of time. Over a short period of time, in such scale. What do you actually do?
That's a bloody good question. I think everyone likes the answer to this one. So I spend, I have a light touch on everything in the business.
Yeah.
As CEO. But we have such a good team. I don't have to wade in too much with anything. So we've got great finance guys, got a good MD, great MD. We've got great commercial guys and stuff. And everyone's, in my mind, is just a superstar. They're faultless. So that makes my life easier in the sense of having to get into all the day-to-day, but this is where the amazing growth is coming from, so we've got to keep up and keep pushing forward. So do you want it as in a day, but as in like when I get up in the morning and stuff?
Or go on, give us a quick run through of what what a day looks like for you.
Right, so my alarm goes off at 6. I don't get up at 6, but the alarm goes off at 6. But I get up about 15 past. Depending on the day, I'll try and so black coffee, and then I'll try and train, prepare my food and that for the day, just kind of wake up. And if it's a day I'm training, I'll come down to the gym and I'll train. So I train 4 times a week. And then I'm into the office 5 days a week. So it's it's a Friday at my house. That's quite unusual. So I'm in the office, if I'm in the country, most of the time. And I find that really important in the sense that this whole working from home thing doesn't quite work for us. The business moves at such a pace, and actually everyone says this in the business, if you've missed it by a day, you've missed loads. So you feel really far behind if you're not in there every day. So I am in every day. I've got exactly the same office here as I have at work, so I can kind of switch between the two, but I do like to be in the office all day. And then there'll be all sorts of meetings for marketing and brand, there'll be sales meetings, but we do NPD. We've always got people coming in at the business. We've got the nice ambassador networks that are always coming in and out. And generally speaking, I try and just wander around the building annoying people.
I bet you're really good at doing that.
Oh, I'm really irritating. We've actually, the Kyle, the MD, and I, we can't go to the same meetings because it's just the utter circus. So when we do, it's normally trouble, but we do spend a lot of time laughing. And actually, when he joined us last year, and he was saying for the first week he couldn't understand why his jaw was hurting, and he realised it's because he's laughing so much, and he wasn't used to that when he was at Holland and Barrett. So we have a lot of laughter. And then I'll probably leave, depending on the day, work probably between 6 and 7, something like that. I've got roughly an hour's drive home, and I get back, feed the cat. If I haven't trained that day, I might train. But then I'm generally straight in my office to get an email. I've missed so many emails from leaving the office and then driving home. I don't normally admit this, but I very often pull over at the side of the road and I'll do messages and then I'll keep going just because there's so many when you get back. And then I'll probably have something to eat. I'll generally might do like half an hour of Netflix, as I watched Game of Thrones recently. I kind of gone into that, but maybe half an hour of TV to unwind a bit. But again, I'm constantly on my phone because we're in 80 countries and we're in America to Australia. There's just always stuff going on. So just because it's 10 o'clock at night here, our team in Boise in the US, they're 7 hours behind, so they still message. But a lot of it is very chatty, banter, jokey. There's all sensible, serious stuff in there, but just this sense of humour flows through the business, just like the heartbeat. And I think that hopefully radiates out into the brands. That's really important. So although I probably get 500 plus messages a day at least, and I do them all myself, and it's hard to keep on top of them all, it never really feels like work. It always feels like fun.
Yeah.
And I try and get about 10, half 10, something like that. But it sounds quite dull now, doesn't it? That's my weekdays. And then weekends I try and go flying and shooting and stuff like that.
It's just flying and shooting, it's fine.
Not at the same time.
That's
I love flying and shooting,
so.
Yeah.
So what was the decision to bring an MD in? How did that come about?
So it was a suggestion actually from our chairman at the time. And I think, and it's actually quite common where you've got someone that's very entrepreneurial who, I can do the detailed business stuff, but it's not really what floats my boat and it's not what I'm best at. I think it comes back down to the conducting the orchestra part. And I think I'd had my eye on Kyle, who it sounds a bit kinky as well, for a while. We'd known him through his previous role. And I knew he loved the brand and he'd always been really supportive of us. And, very good speaker, good, amazing attention to detail, good sense of humour. All the things that we like, he's definitely got, as the team, as I said. And he's probably very much the kind of conduit between the entrepreneur, me, and the investors, Lion Capital, because everyone's got a role to play. But some of these, if you're not careful, you're kind of mixing oil and water. You probably know entrepreneurs and institutional investors, don't necessarily mix. You know, one's probably talking about margin and margin dilution, and one's talking about driving tanks through London.
Yeah.
And it's somewhere you've got to build the business out of that. And no one's wrong. So where you have someone, where you can get like a great MD that comes in, again, you know, to take pressure off me and, you know, do lots of the things I do, but also do more of the stuff I don't want to do. And hopefully just lets me be me and think of the brand and the bigger picture. And I suppose as I, you know, I build the brand and then you've got, you know, the MD building the business. And it's, you can build a business but not build a brand. But I think if you build a brand, you build a business. So it just comes back down to that. You just need all these different skill sets. And we've definitely got a team at work where everyone's just brilliant at what they do. And there's bits of crossover, but it just works. I very often say, actually, it's like misfits that fit. And like I said, we have just tremendous fun, so we're really lucky with the team that we've got.
I like that. You build brand, you build business. Mm. It's good. And you can have a point for that.
Oh, there you go. Words of wisdom. You know what you should call this? Yeah, Alan Barry, wall to wall wisdom.
Oh, nice.
Can I have that one?
I can take the points off as well, you know, if you're going to.
Be a cock. Okay. I'm surprised I'm minus 74, to be perfectly honest.
So, to wrap it up, there's a few things, but the main thing is what I want to know is, like, what's next? What's happening? You got any gossip that you can not?
I've got loads of gossip. Yeah. Not that I'm going to share with you, obviously.
Yeah, what's next for the brand?
I mean, definitely, I don't want to sound dull, but definitely more of the same. We still feel we've got lots and lots to do in the UK, so we're going to go and do it. The international expansion is key. So probably about a quarter of our sales are international. So we know we can do a lot more internationally. So a lot more travel, more in the US, building the team in the US and building the team around the globe. I think certainly broaden the ambassador network we've got and Team Grenade. We're always getting really good in exciting inbound inquiries for the team. And we've got loads of clever content stuff that's lined up. I'm not going to spoil any of it here, but I've shown you a couple of pictures of some of the stuff we're doing. Yeah. It's pretty clever, I think, or mad, one of the two. So I genuinely think we're just getting started, and I think, you know, we're getting started. Everything's going, you know, pretty well. We're trying to stay, again, you know, very humble and grateful for what we've done so far. But I think this is probably just the start for Grenade, and I hope we can really build something that's iconic. Because if you think, if we can do this in 10 years with no money from a standing start, we're a lot better now at doing what we do than we were 10 years ago, where we just didn't really, we knew probably more than we thought we knew, but we certainly didn't know what we know now. So I think if we can take what we know now, and then we've got more funding behind us, and we've got a bigger team, you know, if two people can start this and do what we've done, imagine what 60, 70, 100 people can do. So I think there's just very little I'd change about my day-to-day life at Grenade. I think probably most people would say that. So hopefully we can just do it justice and keep doing what we're doing.
I like it. So the whole point of this podcast...
Either that, I'll just become a plasterer.
Yeah. Well, I can hook you up.
Okay.
So the point of this... Not the whole point of this podcast, but a big driver of the podcast was...
There's a point to all this.
Yeah, there is a point to all this. The was to get super interesting people on who are doing lots of great things through business. Tick. Big tick, right? Yep. The second thing... was that we want to, as soon as this happens, this is like the journey, yeah, this is the top of the hill, yeah?
Okay.
Is we want either Tom Hanks, yeah?
Oh, I saw this.
Or Jennifer Lawrence on the podcast, either or, doesn't matter, or both at the same time.
Okay, do you want them both together?
Both together would be great. Okay. So through the whole like idea behind the 6 degrees separation, etc., we ask every guest, and I'm expecting a big one from you, you've dropped Richard Branson's name a few times. I'm going to push it, but
there's no way he's coming on this.
I know, yeah.
Well, good luck with
what,
that.
What, you won't play that quiz?
He might do. He'd probably be quite good, Jay. I'm not sure he'd know. You'd have to come up with something probably. I don't know if he could know how many hand grenades were made in the Second World War by the Americans.
The quiz is
might not know that.
The quiz is a bespoke, Alan.
Okay.
Of course.
All right, but what would be in his quiz then? Put you on the spot.
What would we quiz him on?
What would you ask him? How many beard hairs he has? You'd have to know the answer.
I'd do something on like.
Not knowing the answer hasn't stopped you asking the question, though. I like that.
I'd do something on like exploration or something like that with him. So I wouldn't do something on brand because, you know, why do something on the brand he owns, as in like you know, the detailing?
Didn't stop you with me.
Yeah, but yours was about a product that the brand is named
true.
After.
Yeah, I don't want to get difficult because I'm start losing points.
No,
again,
because I'll tell you what I wouldn't do as well. It's like I wouldn't quiz you on actual Grenade in case you got something wrong because then it just looks terrible, doesn't it?
I'd look like an absolute loser.
So. not going off point.
Yeah.
We need a guest from you that you intro that we can get onto the podcast that's doing something super interesting, super smart.
I don't know.
You must know a lot of entrepreneurs that are doing great things or exciting things. So we're going to put you on the spot again.
Do I have to name them now?
I'd like you to follow up with it, definitely. I'll tell you what I would like.
Do you want
like.
To follow through?
I would like you to follow through.
No problem.
Yeah. Across the next week.
Okay, follow through in
but
a week.
But what we'll do is we'll do the whole lot of gentleman's agreement. We'll shake on it on camera.
All right.
So I'll get you. Yeah?
I'll get you
and
someone.
Then, and then you get someone that's super interesting for the podcast, yeah?
Okay. Yes. All right. I think I might have someone, actually.
That eventually, basically, the whole point of that is it's someone that's going to be able to get us closer to Tom Hanks or Jennifer Lawrence.
Okay. That, yeah, so that's my cat out then. I was going to say you should do my cat.
Yeah, your cat would be good.
I don't think he knows Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks is a Villa fan, you see, so I've got, I'm a Villa fan.
Really?
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
He's a Villa fan. He's into typewriters. Collecting, so yeah, so that's your task. That's your action. Giving you an action.
Okay, I've got homework.
I know. Sorry, mate.
I've already told you I hated school, and now I've got homework.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I gave up my time.
So
Leave it with me. Who was the other one again? Tom Hanks and
Jennifer Lawrence.
Why Jennifer Lawrence?
Just because she's beautiful.
Just because she's random.
Yeah.
She's random.
And okay. I really like most of the films that she's in.
Is this just so you can get laid?
No, absolutely not.
Are you sure?
100%.
Even with Tom Hanks?
I mean, with Tom Hanks, yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. We would all sleep with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I don't want to become part of some weird sex ring that you've initiated.
No.
And then all of a sudden it's like almost Operation U-Tree. The police come in.
It's pure business.
And they're like, yeah, you're kind of using me to groom celebrities.
Yeah,
okay. Fair enough. All right,
and
then
we'll have it on camera as well that you were involved. So.
True, yeah. I can't deny that. I can't sat here and said it.
So it's been an absolute pleasure finding out about more about Grenade, what you've been doing, the exciting marketing things you're doing, and a bit more about you as well. Just
thank you.
Operate and what's important to you, and you did all right on the WIB points. So you had 10. I knocked on another 11, another one.
Okay, not to know you said it now. No. 10 plus 11, that's 21.
I took 10 off because you keep questioning me, so they've added to 11. And then I'll give you a 12 for being a great guy, and 13. Unlucky for some, but I'm going to end you on 13 because I know that you're going to follow up with a banging guest.
I will get a good one.
Yeah?
I'll get you a good one.
Been a pleasure. Right. Thanks for having me.
No, brilliant. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for the time, guys. Thank you. And thanks for joining me to the weird questions.
Yeah.